8:16 now. Good morning. We've got 33 degrees here in Old Town Park City. Should be a beautiful fall day with highs into the 60s. Well, as we've been reporting, the Park City School Board yesterday began discussing the issue of whether the school district should begin implementing a policy of student drug testing. In the studio with an update, I have School Board member J.J. Ehlers along with Athletic Director Jamie Sheets. Good morning to both of you.
Good morning.
Good morning.
So, Jamie, I'll get you closer to the microphone there, if you would. How is the board leaning at this point?
I think we are leaning definitely towards some sort of drug testing policy. It would be done by a subcommittee out of the policy group that would include the entire our representatives from the community as part of the development of the policy.
All right. Yesterday, board member Phil Kaplan expressed some reservations, mostly about privacy. You think those can be worked out?
Oh, I think so. I mean, it's been vetted in courts, and extracurricular activities are not a right. They're a
privilege.
Thank you. A privilege. And so I think that there shouldn't be any problem with that.
So how do you feel about it personally? And I guess because I have heard from parents who feel like it's an invasion of privacy, to others who say, well, if kids aren't doing drugs, then there's nothing to worry about.
Exactly right. If kids aren't doing drugs, there's nothing to worry about. And it also takes a little bit of the pressure off the kids, gives them an excuse to say, I can't do this because I could be drug tested for my sport or my activity. This would include extracurricular activities as well as sports.
Yeah. So, Jamie, can you kind of give us the Reader's Digest version of what's being done statewide?
There's about, in the research, you come up with different things. I know Granite District tested a few years back, and they've stopped their testing because of budget. But, you know, you can find about 10 districts that test in the state. Carbon started back in the late 80s. Some people have picked up, some districts have picked up on kind of their model of what they used. Davis, Weber, Ogden, Cache Valley, to name a few, all have random testing.
And they all started because?
I don't know exactly why each community, but it's usually probably similar to what we have here. There's some issues that the community is raising, that parents are raising, and even students are raising, saying, you know, we do have this issue, and obviously the last couple of weeks it's a little bit more in the forefront because of the situations that have happened, the unfortunate things. If that's what it takes to get it to the light, then let's start moving forward with it. You know, our whole idea is to protect the kids, not to invade their privacy, but to try to provide a deterrent and an intervention if needed for those kids that need it.
Yeah. You mentioned the carbon model. What does that entail?
Carbon is random testing. Mm-hmm. It's essentially once you, and there's a couple, some districts do it differently, and that's why we'll have a subcommittee looking at this to find out what's going to be right for Park City. So some of them, once you are involved in an extracurricular activity, you're essentially in the pool for the entire time you're in high school. Others, you're in the pool for the entire year for random testing. So even if you played football, you'd still be able to be tested in the spring. And then if, let's say, you did throw a positive result, that would be any consequence that might be with it would essentially happen with that next season you were in. There are a couple districts that just have it during the season. And the UHSA also has a policy, but it's only during season if somebody were to be found using, distributing, promoting use of illegal substance.
Yeah. So when we talk about it, just kids involved in extracurricular activities, we're only talking about part of the student population, kids who are involved in those activities. And we know that these activities are good for kids. And maybe it's the kids who have a lot of time on their hands not involved in this and are the ones that we should be most concerned about.
Yeah. But I think, you know, you look at the kids that are involved in the extracurriculars are usually the ones that are establishing the culture in the school for the kids. And those are the ones that a lot of the other kids are looking at to follow, looking at for behavior, looking at for what is acceptable. So if we can get that community of kids to buy into this, you know, it's just something we don't do. And if the reason is I may be tested on Monday, if that's their out, then let's give it to them. Let's give it to them. And hopefully that changes the culture enough to where the other kids that may be looking at those kids as role models have a reason to say no as well. Because, hey, if those kids aren't doing it, then maybe it's not the cool thing to do.
Yeah. So do you think it would make a difference to institute something like this?
I hope so. I don't, you know, you just don't know. You'll get conflicting reports on studies that, you know, for some places it does deter. Some places there's not much of a change. But I think it's worth a shot. I don't think it's going to hurt. And the kids that I've talked to, the student athletes that I've talked to, the kids that are involved in extracurricular activities, it's very difficult to be a teenager these days and to be around 2 kids, 4 kids, 10 kids, 20 kids on a Friday or Saturday night and not do what everybody else is doing. And so if we can give them a reason to say no, because it's what the athletic director, the administration, or the district has in place, then that's great. I want to give them that out. I want to give them that opportunity to be able to say no, to stay away from things that potentially are going to hurt them.
So, JJ, is it something you think that could get approved before the new board comes on board in January?
No, I don't think that we'll be able to move that fast on it. That's really only 2 months from now. We're already in October, believe it or not. We're really looking at something for the 17-18 school year so that there can be the community can be brought on board. Everybody can understand what the policy is going forward. The students can, if it means modifying their behavior, they can start doing that now. But it would be more for the 17-18 school year is what we're looking at. So, yeah, it could all change with 2 new board members, I guess.
Yeah.
But there's 3 of us that will still be there.
Yeah. How much do you need to budget for the program?
What did we say?
It depends It depends on how you're looking at it. Each test is roughly around $20, depending on what you're testing on. Depending on if you're bringing in 10% into a random pool, if you're asking for everybody to get tested initially, 10% in an initial pool, 25%. Some schools say it's between $4,000 to $5,000, and a couple of the other schools, the bigger districts, had said it's going to cost them upwards of $25,000 a year. So it's figuring out a way to where that money comes from. Does it come from the activity fees? Does it come from something else? Does it come from a grant? But yeah, it just depends. If we have roughly about 650 student athletes. Now, a couple of those student athletes are playing multiple sports. If you add, say, competitive band, if you add debate in there, I mean, you're going to push upwards of 750 to 1,000 kids. And not at any one time. That doesn't mean we're testing 100 kids on a Monday. That's unrealistic. It would be a lot less than that.
Yeah, but I mean, if we're going to do it, then we need to do it, right?
Correct.
In terms of how often it's testing, I mean, to think that the randomness has to be part of this, and
yes,
so you do have to budget for it, right?
Yep.
Because if people go,
yeah,
oh, they don't test, they just say they're going to.
And there's some districts that'll say that they won't test more than, say, 3 times a month. There's another policy that they won't test more than 6 times a month. So it might be that we're doing it while we're in school. We may be doing it once a week. It may be a Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday. It may be in the morning. It may be in the afternoon. You know, those are just kind of the devils in the details of working it out and getting it something that works for Park City and not just that, hey, well, some other district is doing it. Well, that doesn't always make sense.
Yeah. So what, do you just randomly pick a name out of the hat?
Yeah. So once a student athlete or a student would be signed up for an activity, they'd essentially be assigned a number. That number would be put into a program that was, you know, at the district level that would essentially randomly pull up those numbers and then would be signed. There's a lot of privacy that does go into it in the policies that we've been looking at, the examples, to protect the identities. None of this is meant to be punitive. None of this information is shared with law enforcement. In fact, some of the information isn't even shared with district personnel. So it's pretty tight in the examples that we've been looking at.
Who's overseeing the testing?
That would be a private contractor. So we've talked to Valley about potentially, you know, in terms of getting the price, if they're able to do it, if we've got to contract somebody else out, we would want to do it in-house. I don't want to be shipping kids out and missing more school time than possible. Hopefully it wouldn't take more than 10 or 15 minutes to do.
So you're in test?
Yes.
Yeah. And then, but so who gets that information if it's not the district personnel?
Well, it would just be need to know. So it might be me. It might be the principal. It would be just we'd have to establish that chain of command with the policy.
All right. And then in terms of what grades, I mean, are we talking just 9th through 12th? Or, I mean, the boys who died, I mean, were in 8th grade.
Yeah. At this time, 9 through 12, I mean, I think we'll have to take a look at that just because we don't sponsor under 9th grade. We don't sponsor junior high sports and or we've got some activities, but it's just different at the high school right now for where we're at. If we did do sponsored junior high, I'm sure we would look at that.
Right. Those are basically club sports now. So maybe if we had a policy in place, the clubs might choose to partake, but that would be a whole different.
And hopefully we can get a trickle down. I mean, I don't think this is, I don't want anybody to think that this is going to solve the problem or that kids aren't going to get involved in this stuff. They're kids, they're teenagers, they explore, they discover. They're going to happen, but we're trying to give them the out if they want it or the reason to say, you know what, I am a representative of the school, I'm a representative of the community, and that's what the parents have come to us with to say, we've got these kids doing this that are in the forefront, that everybody is seeing. Sometimes you won't see just the regular student that is involved. Now, do we still want to catch that student? And I don't mean catch in a gotcha way. I mean find that student. Yes, that student matters to us as well. But these are mainly the kids that we are seeing in the paper because their picture is there or because they're doing something in an event that gives them notoriety. Those are the ones we want. Those are the ones that you normally see as the role models.
And what about the unsanctioned sports, those playing lacrosse, hockey, mountain biking?
Yeah, that's going to be part of that discussion. Is we have a club sport policy, which is policy 9046, that does try to treat them as much as possible as a school-sponsored team without the financial commitment from the district. So that is something that's going to have to come up in the subcommittee is, do we make this part of lacrosse, hockey, mountain biking, water polo, those sports that are club sports too?
Now, the school district already has a zero tolerance policy with regard to drugs and alcohol. This deals specifically with having drugs on your person. What we're talking about is not in, I mean, we're talking about drugs inside you. So there's no conflict with that policy or?
This is extracurricular. So this would not affect the school day. So if a positive test is revealed, it does not suspend them from school. It's not shared with law enforcement. It's not, nothing else happens besides there is whatever is decided in the policy. There is a little bit of an intervention. They may have to obviously sit out a couple games and or practices as part of the consequence. It's not meant to be punitive. It's meant to be an intervention and a deterrent.
And you brought that up at yesterday's work session. I mean, how do we deal with the kid who's sitting at the end of the bench?
Yeah, that's going to be a discussion that we're going to have to get into a little bit more because it is. While we talk about protecting privacy, you're still communicating when somebody is out that is sitting there for two games. People can put two and two together. And so at the same time, but hopefully the community supports it, the parents support it, and they understand. So you don't get that talking in the stands, talking behind people's backs about it or the stigma attached to it is, hey, we're working together on this to help our kids. That's what our job is, to help educate them, to get them through this stuff. So hopefully we can get buy-in from the community, the parents, the students, the staff, the faculty, administration, the district, everybody involved. And I think we will.
So this will be brought back to the board or a committee will just be
Policy committee will propose to have a subcommittee form. The board will approve that we're going to have a policy on drug testing, which would cause a subcommittee to be formed. They would develop the policy, and then it'll come back to the board and go through the basic same steps as a policy would go through, where the board will review it. It goes out for public review. It's posted. I can't remember all the exact steps. And then we finally vote on it and becomes policy. And that's basically a 2 to 3 month process just to get the policy before the board and finished, yes.
All right, real quickly, let's talk some. The enrollment numbers came in where they were expected, but certainly some tight spots, one being Treasure, which is already bursting at it seems. Class sizes into the 30s there, and since no desire to add classrooms to a school that is eventually getting torn down, what do you do? I mean, I think some discussion yesterday, what you called a college model, just having teachers share classrooms.
Yeah, there was some discussion that possibly using Treasure as an example of a college model where we would put in trailers that the teachers would use for office space and then they would share their classrooms. Emily also has some ideas on possibly where she might put some teachers inside the school without the. So we're going to have to just take a look at that. It does look like we will be hiring some more teachers, so we'll have to figure that out in the next couple weeks.
Yeah. So with an estimated, I heard 25% of classrooms empty every period, it sounds like this could be a solution for the high school as well.
Right, right. And that's what there's been some talk about using that at the high school. It wouldn't solve the whole problem of bringing the ninth graders into the high school. I mean, that wouldn't take care of all of it. But it would definitely increase the space that we currently have and maybe make the addition that we'd have to have less addition to the high school.
So realistically, how quickly could something like that be implemented? I mean, before you could hire teachers to
I think we're going to start hiring the teachers ASAP and figure out where to put them as we go along. I really don't know if we decide to go with like a trailer model. I mean, it would take a lot of I really don't know. I'd leave that up to Dr. Conley.
Budget numbers, it looked like the school district came in $1.6 million below budget. So how did that happen and where does the extra money go?
We need new teachers, more teachers, so it'll make it very easy to be able to hire more teachers. It happened, basically, we came in under budget in some departments, and then also the tax revenues were better than Todd Hauber had predicted. He's great at under-predicting instead of over-predicting, which helps us to you'd much rather have more money in the end than find out that he had over-predicted and we don't have enough, so...
All right, so it's money that can just go into the operating fund? It doesn't have to go into...
Right, most of it's operating fund money, yes.
Okay, and real quickly, in terms of negotiations, when do those start?
We will have some training in January, I believe. Dr. Conley will have a better detailed timeline at the next meeting. But we'll start in January with the interest-based training that we do with the unions and then the boards.
The Snyderville Planning Commission met last night with really the only item of interest there, a request for the reuse of the Red Barn on White Pine Canyon Road. In the studio with details, I have Snyderville Planning Commissioner Chuck Klingenstein. Good morning, Chuck.
Good morning, Leslie. And, of course, it's all interesting.
Well, as I mentioned, most of last night's discussion about the proposed adaptive reuse of the Red Barn as a sports equipment shop. The item was continued, but commissioners did approve one motion calling the building historically significant. So what does that mean?
Well, the county has an ordinance in place, and it was updated several years ago to try to preserve historic structures. And this structure in particular, we thought it had been protected years ago, but apparently due to fire, water, some issue, apparently a easement never got recorded. So we're kind of back at the drawing table to say, okay, first step, deem it historically significant. Once we do that, we have two more steps to approve a use in it. Right now, the use is an office use, which generates very little impact, and the neighbors and gave input, verified that. They said, hey, that's not an issue. And what's important for us to all realize, and one that people often will say, hey, it's just going to be a small little retail shop, mom and pop. We as a planning commission have to think about it as a conditional use permit. It's not just this shop. It's whoever's going to use it in the future has that use in perpetuity, basically.
Yeah. So by calling it or deeming it historically significant, what impacts does that have then on future reuses?
If there's an easement put in place on the building in exchange, you know, the use is allowed, then they cannot do any exterior modifications of any significance. They got to retain the structure, this structure, even though it has a new roof on it and would not be necessarily reflective of the past. It resembles what was there in the first place. The siding is original siding, you know, and they upkeep the siding. They can't do any significant changes to the building, its shape, its windows, and so forth.
So you said you were not opposed to retail use, but you are concerned about what happens in the future.
In the future.
If this should go away.
Because, the applicant is, well, it's the Ivers family, but the proposed use is with Switchback Sports. And, it's a nice little business. They don't generate a lot of traffic, it appears. But the use could change if somebody bought up Switchback Sports or Switchback Sports ends its business model and somebody else goes in there, because general retail is the use being proposed, and that's very broad in our code. So we asked the staff to go back and take a look at tightening things up so that it just can't be a high traffic generating business. And I don't know if that's going to work or not, but I asked the staff to take a look at it, and the commission appeared to support that.
A few residents of White Pine Canyon Road, including Steve Oscarthorpe, spoke. Steve bashed the application, saying the traffic impacts. What's your take then on traffic?
Well, one of the things I kind of learned about last night, and I've been around long enough, I should know some of these things, but Lower Village Road from the canyons goes on to White Pine Canyon Road, and so it's another alternative way out of the canyons. And as we all know, during peak times, we all look for the quickest way out of a place or into a place. So we need to understand, is the road up to county standards? If it's not up to county standards, what was the intent of the original traffic flow modeling that was done for the canyons? Because, you know, obviously, when they did the analysis for the canyons, they took a look down here and said, oh, it's just an office use. And we're now looking at a retail use that could potentially, maybe not now, but sometime in the future, generate enough traffic to be of a significant impact.
Yeah. So county's looking into that then?
Asked the staff to also just give us a little bit of a better understanding of the traffic planning that has been done on that. And, you know, I think the commission as a whole, when we voted to support the fact that it is a building worthy of historic significance, we all want the building to be saved. Miles Ivers, representing the family, said we want to preserve the building. Now we're wrestling with trying to figure out a use that doesn't complicate things anymore.
Steve Oscarthorpe also asked, in terms of what precedent could be set by historic reuse, could he take his barn on Old Ranch Road and propose it for commercial?
If his building, and I know there's a barn out there, but I don't know what the studies are and all that that has verified the fact that it's a historical structure. But long as a structure anywhere in the Snyderville Basin is deemed historic, it is eligible for this process.
Okay. Later this month, the Snyderville Commission will look at the proposed changes to the Canyon Spa Master Plan. So what's going to happen then?
Well, if I understand it all correctly, a group called Replay Sports is working with the ownership interest to replan a lot of the core village. And so in our discussion last night, we just had a discussion about a lot of us have no knowledge of the canyon's specially planned area, or some knowledge of it, or in my case, some rusty knowledge of it, because I haven't dug into the books, which, I mean, it's been a while, and there's probably 3 feet of binders on my shelves of all the canyon spa. It's very complex. So in looking at this, we'd also like to have a history lesson and re-educate ourselves along with the staff and the community about what is the Canyon Spa, what's it all about, why is it there, and what is the latitude from not only the applicant's side to ask for changes, but perhaps the community to ask for changes through its elected and appointed officials.
So is it just going to be like a Canyon Spa 101 work session before the actual application comes?
I don't think
to
it's going to be before, because we have to figure out how to orchestrate it all. Mm-hmm. Right now we have a schedule for a work session with Replay, and we asked the staff to figure out what was best about getting a scheduled Canyons 101 in place.
Okay. Anything else you want to mention?
No. Happy to be here. Thank you.
Thanks, Chuck Klingenstein, a member of the Snyderville Basin Planning Commission. KPCW News 842 now. Good morning. I'm Leslie Thatcher. It's the local news hour on KPCW. In the studio with me now, Summit County Health Department Director Rich Bullo, along with the newly hired Health Department PIO, Derek Sidaway. Good morning to both of you.
Good morning.
Good morning.
So, Derek, let's start with you. Your name, very familiar. Of course, your family's lived here in Summit County a while, huh?
That's true, yes.
So, about 4 generations or something, I think I read?
Yep, 4 generations. Basically the same place, too. So, we find a place we like and we stick around, I guess you could say.
All right. Well, tell us a little bit about yourself.
So I grew up here, as you said, native of Summit County in the Rockport area by the state park. Went to North Summit High School. And then traveled around a little bit in college, settled at the U, spent my last 2 years there, and got my degree in mass communications from them.
Okay, well, great. Your dad, I think, is probably a name we're all familiar with. He heads up, what, the Search and Rescue?
Mm-hmm. That's correct. Years? Yep. My dad's the liaison for the Summit County Search and Rescue.
Okay, now that's a volunteer position, or is he?
He's the sheriff's office liaison, but all the search and rescue members are volunteers.
And that's something you've spent some time doing as well?
Uh-huh. Yeah, I'm just coming over 3 years doing that now. It's really nice to get out and see parts of the county and help people.
Okay. Well, let's turn to you, Rich. That time of year when the health department loves to remind us to get our flu shots, I guess the biggest question, are they going to be effective this year?
They think so. One important difference, there's a couple of important points. One of them is that the flu mist, you probably heard, was found to not be effective, so we are not offering flu mist. But the new flu shot is actually a quadrivalent, which means it has four strains instead of the typical three. And so at least in theory, it will be effective against four strains of flu. And if you do the quick math, it should be have a 25% greater chance of hitting whatever strain is out there. So far, there has been nationally and globally some influenza. They've identified the strains, and so far they think this vaccine is going to be quite effective.
Good. Well, mist have been pretty used, I guess, mostly for children, so there's not that opportunity anymore, huh?
That's correct. Those kids had better get used to a needle. So,
who really needs a flu shot?
Well, my own bias is that everybody needs it. And the reason for that is that independent of influenza, getting a flu vaccine has been shown to reduce upper respiratory illness, missed days of work. You have generally a tendency to not pick up those bugs, even if they aren't influenza. And part of that is because your immune system is boosted to fight the flu. So if the flu vaccine is out in the environment, your system isn't fighting that as actively. So you can fight other things. You can resist other things. And those data are pretty clear. So I think everybody, but in particular, individuals who either are immune system impaired, so people with diabetes, people with chronic disease, elderly, individuals who are caring for the elderly, individuals who are caring for families, daycare workers, school workers, really anybody who is in the public and has a risk either of being personally having an impaired immune system or being around people that do.
Yeah. Are they free?
No. They're $25 at the health department. Now, we do have, if you qualify, we do have some that are free, depending upon your socioeconomic status, et cetera. We do bill insurances, depending upon whether or not, you know, you've got insurance. But we can, you know, contact us and we can work that out.
So can you explain? I mean, we hear of people who get their flu shot and then get sick, usually right after. Is that because of the shot?
It is not. I hear it all the time. In fact, I've got employees that won't get a flu shot because they say that they've gotten sick from them. Those studies have been conducted for decades now. And you got sick, but it wasn't influenza and it wasn't from the vaccine.
Now, there's certainly other ways to build your immunity. I mean, people say, you know, eat right,
yep.
Exercise, vitamin D3. There's acupuncture.
Sleep. You know, people,
sleep, yeah.
Yep, very important. They're finding stress. In fact, I'm personally finding stress to make me not feel well. And I think on a broader scale, individuals who have high pressure jobs, they don't sleep well and they tend to have more illness. So an important thing, that's one of the reasons that exercise is good. It improves your sleep. But you're absolutely right. There are ways to boost the immune system without the vaccine, but the vaccine is specific to influenza.
All right. Where are we with the mental health needs assessment that started this spring? You had hoped to, I think, have some recommendations to the county council in time for budget season.
Well, actually, a little bit late for budget season. And we're actually hoping to be in front of council in the next few weeks. We are reviewing the final draft of the report. And one of the reasons I wanted to talk about this today is that report is the results of the assessment that was done. And we had a great turnout, over 1,000 responses to that assessment. From that, we're identifying needs and aligning those with programs. And then we're going to have another community engagement process where we develop a strategic plan. That strategic plan is what we hope to really identify or use to identify what resources we need and what are our priorities. And from that, we will build over a period of time. It's probably going to be about a 3-year strategic plan. Identify, what resources we need to build a system that will be more supportive of those individuals that need the care. The general timeline is that we hope to be in front of council in 2 to 3 weeks. We have requests from the Park City Council to also present to them. So we'll go to Summit County Council first, shortly after that time to Park City Council. And then we'll start some community engagement process to actually develop that strategic plan. So this document says, here are our needs. The strategic plan will say, here is how we're going to meet those needs. Here are the individuals, organizations, and the timeline to get us there.
Yeah. Any clues at this point, though, what is at the top of that list of needs?
Well, one of the pieces of data that I can share that I think is very insightful is that far fewer than half of the individuals that identified in the survey that they need resources have not had an experience with our legal system. So they've not been arrested. They have not been in jail. They are citizens within our community who need mental health or substance and or substance abuse services, but have not had run-ins with the law. I think that's an important piece of data because we tend to focus so much on the jail. The needs are out there separate from that system. So I think that's an important piece of information. Generally, I think, at least in my view, the results were more positive than I anticipated. I mean, generally, people are getting what they need, but there are delays in that. There are long wait times. People have had to sometimes travel out of the community. It depends on what the service is. So I don't think there's surprises in the report. There's some confirmation of what we thought. And then there's also, I think, an indication that the providers that we do have in Summit County are doing a pretty darn good job. But there are certain services that we just don't have.
Okay. And real quick, an update on the groundwater studies that are happening.
So we are this week reviewing the report that we did, the study on the eastern Summit County water. We'll be making recommendations, taking that to council in the next few weeks as well. From that, we'll go to the Board of Health and begin to develop those maps that I've discussed before that will focus on areas where we permit or don't permit conventional septic systems. And it's going to be controversial, but I feel really good about the fact that our department has shifted from just regulation to actually looking at the future and planning for the future. I think that's an important philosophical shift that is going to help us avoid some of the issues that we already see in Snyderville Basin, help avoid those moving forward, and hopefully help avoid those on the east side.
Yeah, so are existing septic systems then grandfathered or eventually would have to get onto some type of water treatment?
The goal would be to eventually get onto a sewer system. Mm-hmm. When I say conventional system, though, we will still be permitting septic systems. Mm-hmm. But there will be areas in the county where the conventional system won't work. We know it doesn't work. We won't even go down that road there. We'll be permitting advanced systems or, if possible, getting people onto sewer more proactively.
Okay. So you're saying this month or next that you?
Correct. Yep. It'll be in front of the Board of Health on the November meeting. We will then go to council. And then, obviously, we're going to follow up with other community, the municipalities, et cetera. We'll go to the Council of Governments with the information and make sure that it's out there.
All right. So you'll have that map then, that proposed zoning map?
That's the next step. We're going to present these results, and then we'll go to the Board of Health to actually develop those maps.
Okay. Anything else you want to mention?
I think I'm good.
We're good.
Hey, Derek and
thanks
Rich, thanks for coming in.
Thank you.
Well, coming up tomorrow evening, it's the third annual Fall into Fashion event on Park City's historic Main Street. In the studio, I have two Main Street proprietors, Lori Harris with Mary Jane's and Ingrid Hallberg with Burns Cowboy Shop. Good morning to both of you girls.
Good morning.
Leslie.
So, Lori, I think this is something you had started 3 years ago and have now expanded it.
Yeah, so 3 years ago, Vanessa DePalma from Farasha, Katie Eldridge from Panic Button Media, and myself got together and said, what could we do to promote business during the shoulder season? And since we were in fashion, we said, let's do something related to fashion. So it's actually modeled after an event that Anna Wintour put together years ago in New York City. And so we kind of modeled it off of that. So brought stores together, promote an event for a girls' night out type of thing. And when the women shop, they get a stamp at stores on their ticket. And for three stamps, so three purchases at participating stores, you get entered to win a gift certificate from one of the participating stores. And it's a $100 gift certificate.
All right. How many stores do you have participating?
We have 15 this year. Want to talk about some of them?
Absolutely. There is quite a variety among them. Alpaca International, a nice store with beautiful warm woolen wraps and coats and shawls. We have fashion boutiques like Cake Boutique and Mary Jane's, of course. Panache is also very involved and very excited about being part of the event. Of course, our store, Burns Cowboy Shop, is involved. Cake and also has their new body store, C2, for a nice pickup of small body products and makeup, etc. Couple more, Dijour Boots is participating. Rooted, a lovely home goods store, perfect place to pick up little gifts. Nice time to go out, get together, and get those stocking stuffers bought.
Okay, so it's happening tomorrow, starting at 5?
Yeah, Thursday night, 5 to 9, and then our after party's at Handle at 9 p.m., where we'll give away the gift certificates.
Okay, and then what people just kind of...
They shop at all. Yeah, mm-hmm. They stroll the street, shop at all the stores. Each store is having something different. For example, Farasha is having trunk shows with specific designers. Mary Jane's is offering 20% off. Burns is offering 10% off. So there'll be food and beverage at each store as well as at the after party.
All right. So get a group and go shop.
Exactly.
Absolutely.
Okay. Anything else people ought to know?
No, just come out and support your local store owners.
And have fun shopping.
Okay. Ingrid and Lori, hey, thanks for coming in this morning.
Thank you.
Thank you, Leslie.
You're listening to the Local News Hour. This is KPCW.